Blog Talk Radio.
All right, 4:30. It's your boy TB Thomas. Y'all already know what time it is, man. Roundtable about to go underway, man. And you know what? I really thought I was gonna have, you know, one of these nice, easygoing shows and try to mellow out through Friday, get everybody to do their thing on a Friday evening, whatever y'all do what y'all gotta do. Get us ready for this weekend as best we possibly can. And as soon as I sit down, I'm not even gonna get on or get into it. I'ma just take off this blazer, loosen up my tie. Step inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Sports City, welcome to the round table. Let's roll.
Feel it coming in the air.
Yeah.
And the screams from everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to the smell.
I'm ready.
It's a dangerous love affair.
Come on.
Can't be scared when it goes down. Got a problem, tell me now. Only thing that's on my mind.
Okay, the caller number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And like I said, Sports City, I'm going to try and do my best to get to a lot of these topics, but it seems like almost every day we get back in this kitchen, there's always an elephant in the room worth us some food for thought. Hopefully the people can do these dishes. But your boy TP Time with God is, like I said, we got 60 minutes. I'm going to try my best to get through in and out of this thing so y'all can enjoy your Friday. I want y'all to go out there and have fun, enjoy the weekend. Because we are on the month of October. And let me tell you, people, it's a chill outside, so I love it, man. It's like 60, 50 degrees outside. That's my type of weather. People outside are like, it's too cold. I love it. So stop complaining. If you want that 90-degree humidity, you can have it. You can have it. Okay. I do have my brother with me calling in by way of the state of North Carolina. I was going to say South Carolina, the Brooklyn Knight himself, Mr. Knight, a.k.a. Nasha Dominus. Welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm good, man. I'm dry in Washington, North Carolina now, though. So, you know, I'm steady moving north, boss.
Okay. Okay, he's following that North Star. He's following that North Star. If that was tasteless, I'll probably. I'm just trying to have a little fun. Especially where he is right now. Chandler, like I started at the beginning of the show, there's always an elephant in the room type of topic. And like I said, I thought we were going to be able to mellow out and do what we need to do, put these dishes out the best way that we can. But the first topic I want to start with, I want you to look westward in the state that you're in. If you're in Washington, North Carolina, right, I want you to look west. And exactly, you know, opposite from you, no, I think Tennessee is actually next to you. But, okay, so I'll do northwest, if you will, just a little bit. But in the state of Kentucky, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, do we got some drama going on. And I know you feel some type of way about the guy that runs the show there. I don't know how much he had to do with it. But the Louisville Cardinals basketball team is getting caught up in a scandal. Basically saying they entice recruits while dealing with an escort service to try and get some of these players there. And Rick Pitino actually just spoke recently in reference to the guy or the slash assistant coach, or he had something to do with the team in the coaching manner, being his name is Andre McGee. This is big news. This is a breaking situation. He actually just published a book or what have you about this situation, and this is pretty epic right now. Swirling around a Louisville team that's been, you know, top 25 for at least the past 4 or 5 years. They just won a national championship, I want to say, 3 years ago as well. Your thoughts on what's going down in the state of Kentucky, let alone on the campus of Louisville right now?
Okay, well, I've been driving through a hurricane most of the day, so this is the first I'm hearing of this. So what I'm hearing you say is somebody wrote a book detailing all of the illegal things that Rick Pitino has been doing over the years to get recruits to Louisville. Is that what I'm hearing?
Exactly, yes.
I'm not surprised. This happens at every major program. You know, I have no love for Rick Pitino because I think he's a used car salesman. I think that everyone gave him a pass for the nonsense that happened with him and his assistant's wife. I still got a problem with that. And the fact that he was given a pass, and yet he's supposed to be trying to mold young men, go figure. So it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, if you will sleep with your subordinate's wife, why wouldn't you get some 17-year-old kid a hooker? Goes hand in hand to me.
Now, interesting thing about it is he's trying his best to, you know, speak about it and more or less, I might as well just say he's kind of like trying to, you know, throw the wayside on the situation, if you will. But, you know, he has to say the politically correct thing while he's in front of these cameras and microphones or what have you. But just like you said, he's a few years removed from the situation that happened with a co-worker's wife or what have you, the extortion situation. Now this comes around, and just to, you know, there's different situations of, there's one person that said that they had their children, three different girls of their family, deal with some of the basketball players on the Louisville team to try and get, you know, caught up in the situation. Will there ever be scrutiny removed from Rick Pitino, if you will? I mean, this seems like it's going to continue to follow him until he finally puts that clipboard, you know, on that final nail and says, I don't want to coach anymore. He is going to continue to get the bad rap through any sport venue in basketball, whether it's pro basketball or in college basketball. His name is respected, especially on the college basketball level. And looking at the situation right now with the escort situation and how this is just overblown. I mean, this is just breaking news. This just recently happened or recently hitting the surface. I feel bad for the students or the athletes or the players that are playing for the Louisville team. But, I mean, this is Rick Pitino's second instance in as less of 3 to 5 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, his name is caught up in something. And I'm not going to say that he has something to do with this directly, but just like Chandler said, it's an interesting situation that it's his name that's tied up in this situation once again. So I am heavily concerned about the situation. I'm wondering how, you know, the NCAA looks at this, if they – you know, go deeper into this investigation and, you know, try and lay down some type of suspension or whatever may come out of this. I think more details have to come out of this before they start digging into suspensions or what have you. But there's a tell-all book right now out, and Louisville is going to have to play defense and not in the pressure form that Pitino likes. They're going to have to defend themselves in this upcoming season, where the basketball season is only a month away. Only a month away.
But the thing is, he's going to skate on this like he skates on everything. He constantly gets a pass. I mean, Larry Brown just basically got caught, you know, taking tests for his players. And people are trying to cover up for him. There are certain coaches that, because people like them, that no matter what they do, someone's going to excuse it. Now, you will hear someone on ESPN within the next 3 days start talking about how it's not his fault. He can't be held accountable for everything that goes on. But yet, when Jim Boeheim got banged by the NCAA, did you hear anybody coming to his defense? Other than Dick Vitale?
Right.
Because most people don't like Jim Boeheim. Okay? Mm-hmm. They don't like him. So nobody had a problem with that. Now, Pitino, you're going to hear all kinds of people come, oh, well, you know, and the head coach can't be responsible, and how's he supposed to know, and da-da-da-da. He's going to get a pass, just like Larry Brown's getting a pass. There's certain guys that are going to get a pass. And the thing is, the NCAA, just like there's still been no sanctions against the University of North Carolina and the academic fraud that was uncovered by the United States government, okay, have you heard anybody sanctions from the NCAA for them? Not yet. You won't.
Not a piece. Not a piece.
You won't. There are certain programs and coaches that are untouchable. Tino's one of them. I don't know how he did it, but he did. You know, because if this was my man in Kentucky, old Coach Cal, listen, they'd have him on 60 Minutes right now on the grill.
It as I read further into this situation, I am nothing but shaking my freaking head because the lady that is caught up in this, her name is Katina Powell. Of course, she has my last name. 43-year-old woman said that she performed over 22 parties for this basketball team. 22 parties. So you know, I'm guessing every one of these parties she might have gotten to a situation with these players or what have you. But it's not like, you know, some of the past players or some of the current players right now don't know of this woman. And the crazier situation would be if they have to go through some, like, lie detector test or something like that to see if they do know her or if they get, you know, caught up in a court case or some situation like that. This is a heavy situation around, once again around Rick Pitino. I was going to say Boeheim. He got me caught up in the biggies. He brought me right back there. But Boeheim no longer in the biggies, so I'll take that back also. But interesting situation in front of Rick Pitino and him moving forward, especially in the ACC, how these guys are going to continue to play ball while this is hanging over their heads. And if they can actually continue to play strong basketball while they lost some of the bigger names to the pros in this past season as well. So if they have a lingering effect and they're not up to par and, you know, interesting teams are knocking them off, a lot of people will probably use this as a segue or, you know, the weight on their shoulders if Louisville could pull this back together or if they do start playing strong basketball, they dangle this back in their face to kind of distract them. And you know the committee or, you know, people around college basketball will try to weigh a situation out like that because it's interesting in itself. It's controversy at the end of the day.
Well, and not for nothing, listen, you got a 17-year-old, a woman. You really think this is going to make more guys want to go to Louisville? Not less, more.
That and also, I mean, it holds in between the rivalry up against Kentucky because it gets kids to choose between him or Calipari, just like the name that you just mentioned. So it'll actually be one of those Kentucky rivalries if they want to go and deal with the Cardinals or the Wildcats. But I want more out of this situation before I continue to spill into it. I just got wind of this situation just like everybody else is. And once again, it's Rick Pitino, man. And I feel bad, especially for any other kids that are still on the team down there in Louisville. Okay, Chandler, anything else toward that or should I move along?
No, we can move along because we'll probably be the only people even saying anything bad about Pitino at this point. With the way that women are viewed in the sports world anyway, no, they're going to look at this as, oh, what's the problem? So you got him a date. What's the big deal? So, yeah, we can move on.
Okay. So now I have also, I'm not going to duck from my boys. The Hurricanes had an interesting loss last night up against Cincinnati. But before I get to that, I want to talk about the Thursday night football game. Now, interesting enough, right, Chandler, I have the Pittsburgh Steelers losing this game by 3 where Justin Tucker bangs another game-winning field goal, and it feels like only yesterday when he came in the fourth field and knocked a 60-yarder through the uprights to beat the Lions where he basically kicked, I think it was 5 or 6 field goals to win the game, and Detroit couldn't score a lot of points because the same Detroit team that we've been talking about, this was actually last season, if I'm not mistaken, couldn't put up enough points to win a game like that. However, you're looking at a Pittsburgh Steelers team, right? And interesting enough, y'all heard me and Sirius go at it in the kitchen Tuesday night. I'm not even going to put anything past it. We went at it Tuesday night. He was talking about Detroit and the Steelers this, that, and the third, and I, you know, I wasn't comfortable with the guy I'm about to go on to right now, right? So you got Big Ben. He gets knocked out. He's out for the next 4 to 6 weeks, depending on how he deals with, you know, the therapy and if he gets back in NFL shape, so on and so forth. But the guy that I am going to pick on right now is Michael Vick. Now, I know a lot of people have a perspective and agenda toward Michael Vick because of what happened while he was down in Virginia. I mean, he was on the Atlanta Falcons, but it happened in Virginia where his friend drove a car, got pulled over, and said he lived in Michael Vick's house, and they found everything in Michael Vick's house. And everybody knows how the story played out. He went to jail and served 2 years, and then, you know, everybody calls him, well, rightfully so. He's not an animal lover, so on and so forth, because of what he did. All right. So now he, you know, goes through the league, Philadelphia, the Jets, so on and so forth. But now this is a stint for him right now, here and now, for him to make another name for himself to start in the NFL and get another team to believe in him, whether it's the Steelers or if he makes a good stint right now, move throughout the NFL before he really hangs up his cleats, so on and so forth. Now, the thing that I peg toward Michael Vick is all throughout his career, even while he was in college, he struggled with accuracy. And not to just pinpoint, well, I have to. I'm going to say I am pinpointing, but, you know, not to just, you know, point my finger at a situation, but I have to. The Steelers had the lead throughout the game, let the Ravens back in the game. And this is interesting because this is an AFC North. Let me just say it together. An AFC rivalry. Forget just the AFC North and the division out there. And it's an AFC rivalry regardless. They let the Ravens back in this game. And, however, they get the ball in overtime and go for a questionable call on fourth down and have Vic throw a pass to a wide-open Antonio Brown. I don't know if people seen this, but if they didn't, please review it however you can, NFL.com, whatever you need to do to watch it. Antonio Brown is wide open in the flat right by the first down marker. He overthrows him on fourth down. Now, put the Ravens in a situation to lead themselves downfield to get the victory. But I don't know if his confidence isn't there. Everybody knows that Vic has a cannon of an arm. I won't put that past him. The boy could throw the ball, flicking his wrist, he can throw it 70 yards. But I don't know if it's a situation where he needs to tone it down or relax or let things come to him. But he has to know that he's the starter right now until Ben is healthy to get back out there. And plus, Ben is dealing with a ligament sprain. Who to say Ben is back up to par 100%, Ben Roethlisberger, when he's cleared by the doctors to go out there and play. But interesting enough for the Steelers, they let the Ravens back in the game to let the Ravens get their first win of the season. The Steelers lose the game, and questionably so. Josh Scobie is looking like the guy that everybody in the world, not just the nation or the state of Pennsylvania, the world is picking on because of some of the chip kicks that he could have had. He missed these kicks by an interesting margin. Chandler, your thoughts on this game last night, where Pittsburgh let the Ravens come in the Heinz Field, steal one late in overtime.
So let me get this straight. Your contention is that it's Michael Vick's fault they lost because, you know, no quarterback has ever overthrown a receiver in the history of football except for Michael Vick last night. Is that what I'm hearing?
No.
Okay.
I'm just saying that pass right there. Hold on. That pass right there, that's a pitch and catch right there. That pass right there. And there's probably a lot of different scenarios in that game that could have went the Steelers' way or could have went the Ravens' way. But one, let alone, okay, you're right. You are right. One, on that fourth down call, they could have called they could have kicked another field goal, but they didn't believe in Scobie. So they had to go with Vic. And it was a fourth and one call. And he ended up throwing to the flag. All you got to do is hit this guy in the chest. He literally threw it way over Antonio Brown's head, and Antonio just fell out of bounds and, you know, kind of kept his face in the ground like there's nothing else he can do. But proceed, and we do have a chef in the building.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to, yes, it was a pitch and catch, and no quarterback in the history of football has ever overthrown a pitch and catch ball. I'm sorry, your quarterback's name is Matt Stafford. I've seen him miss that catch. The bottom line is, yeah, he had a bad pass, but here's a thought. Why wasn't it a running play with Le'Veon Bell? Here's another thought. On the previous fourth down play, because remember, that was the second fourth down play of the game. On the previous one, where they tried to bootleg Michael Vick, how about the offensive line block? Or better yet, how about you give it to Le'Veon Bell? This loss is not on Michael Vick. It's on Mike Tomlin. Because you did not get a kicker you could trust. So Josh Scobie, who has been bad since he got there, right? What did I tell you in the offseason? I said the lack of a kicker is going to cost the Pittsburgh Steelers that division. It is going to cost them the division. It's costing them the division. The head coach couldn't find a kicker who can make kicks. So now you're going for it on fourth down every time. You're taking two-point conversions every time. This loss is not on Michael Vick. This is on the Steelers. Oh, and by the way, how about when you're up 20-3, how about your defense actually stops somebody? It never should have gotten to the point it was, Ty. That's the bottom line. Did Mike Vick miss the pass? He absolutely did. He didn't get his shoulder squared. He didn't get his body turned properly. He missed the pass. Now, I'm going to give him a pass because, wow, how much time did he actually get even to even prepare for this game? He got one day. And he ain't played a game in God knows how long as a starter. So I'm going to give him a pass on his rustiness on that. And, yes, he should have made the pass. Yeah, it was an easy pass. He should have made it. But how about the coaching staff for the Steelers get a kicker that they can actually put on the field to win a game? How about the offensive line block on a fourth and one? How about the head coach don't keep going for it on fourth down in overtime? At some point, the kicker's on the team for a reason. Josh Scobie, this is not some rookie guy. I get he's been bad, but you know what? He's been kicking in the league a long time. And if you trust him that little, then maybe you should get a new kicker.
Well, they are in the works of looking for a new kicker. That is for sure. And there's a lot of questionable situations while, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers defense has always, you know, hung their hat on stuffing the run. Forsett went for over 150, well, he had 150 yards rushing. I agree with you, Chandler. On a fourth and one call, you got Le'Veon Bell, who's averaging over 5 yards a clip running the ball, and you force Vic to throw it. All right, I set up an I format and let a fullback pick up one of those tacklers and see what Le'Veon can do. If he's going to make a cutoff of these guys or get to the first down marker, so be it. I'd rather live with it like that than watch an overthrown ball. But you're right. I should hang this all on Michael Vick, but, I mean, he had a full game of play. He only had 7 incompletions. He only threw for 124 yards in the game also. Flacco had a questionable game as well, only 189 yards to be a $100 million quarterback himself. I'm not going to pick too much. I got a lot to pick apart in this game as well. We do have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, feeling good, feeling great. Good afternoon. And real quick, Todd, I think this is the last day, if I'm not mistaken, Arizona gets 100-degree temperature. We should be in the 90s and lower until the end of the year. So, you know, I'm glad your bird months came at the right time because it was getting too hot. On the other hand, this game last night, it was a win. It was a – I don't know what to call it. You know, you got a team up by, I think, 17, and then you had a Pittsburgh team who had 2 chances – within 4 minutes to win the game, couldn't do it. And I just don't understand, you know, what's really going on in Pittsburgh. If I told you Michael Vick came in this game, missed only 4 or 5 completions, threw no interceptions, had no fumbles, threw a touchdown, and Le'Veon Bell ran the ball like he did, you would expect that this team came away with a victory. You would expect that Michael Vick did exactly what he was supposed to do. Not turn the ball over and make good decisions. And you don't worry about the yardage because at that point, you know, Michael Vick's doing what he's supposed to do, and Le'Veon Bell was running the ball very well. So it's not like, you know, they were stopping the run and they were making Mike be one-dimensional by not being able to run himself and making him make short throws. He was making short throws and good throws that were the complete passes and long ones down the field. And there was a couple that, you know, they were on the sideline that the guys would have been able to get their foot about 6 inches back, if that. You know, that's a, you know, 20, 30-yard catch, and it's a different story today. But, you know, that's neither on either of them. It was just, you know, the ball, you know, the way math works, you know, he wasn't able to get his feet in. So it is what it is. Michael Vick didn't do a bad job yesterday. He didn't do a tremendous job. He didn't. You know, if it makes any sense, he didn't do anything to win the game, but he didn't do anything to lose you the game. And if I remember correctly, the big harp on Michael Vick was, we just need Michael Vick not to lose us the game. Well, he didn't do that for you. Not only did he not lose you the game, he came off of 3 days. Well, scratch that. He came off of the bench in Sunday's game for a half a game. Doesn't know this offense. Spent Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and probably all of Thursday up until game time trying to get this offense down. Came out and had, like I said, no turnovers. We talked about this man and the turnover machine that he is. as a quarterback, whether it be dropping the ball because of his small hands or throwing interceptions. And he came into this game and didn't either. So I'm not going to put this game on Michael Vick. He was doing what he was supposed to do throughout the entire game. At the end of the game, the passer speaking up. For a right-handed quarterback, that is quite simply one of the easiest pitch and catch balls you'll ever do. For a left-handed quarterback, it's quite a little bit harder. And not only that, the quarterback, the receiver, and not only Antonio Brown, but every receiver has been thrown to by a right-handed quarterback. And for all intents and purposes, I've never played wide receiver professionally or any level. Multiple friends, and from what I've heard, switching from a right-handed quarterback to a left-handed quarterback is worse than night and day. It is, you know, if you can get, you know, the darkest of the dark at night to the brightest of the bright at day, that's how they say trying to catch a ball from a left-handed quarterback, switching, especially when you've spent your entire career with a right-handed quarterback to get that ball. So we're going to talk about a few of the catches that weren't made, a couple of the balls that were misthrown or could have been caught. You have to take that into effect as well. But also, not only that pass at the end, was it to the right side of the field. So why don't you switch it, make it to the left side for your left-handed quarterback, but you keep it to the right side, and he's got to throw across his, you know, across his body to Antonio Brown, and it just doesn't work out. If he throws it to his left, does he make that pitch and catch? Is it easier? You know, I believe he does, and I believe it is. You know, hindsight's 20/20 now, so, you know, I'm going to put most of the onus, most of the blame, actually all of the blame, on Mike Tomlin. He did not coach a well game. He did not coach a good game from about, you know, halfway point in the third quarter till it ended with a loss. I understand. I'm not going to harp on the fact that he had two attempts in overtime and passed on those. They were both, if I'm not mistaken, over 50-yard attempts if he were going to try those. I think it was a 56 and a 51, you know, and me being a very, very intriguing numbers guy, the fact is, everywhere else in the NFL, outside of 50 yards, is a 56% chance. In Heinz Field, it's 26%. I understand your guy just missed two field goals. It's the four. I know it's overtime, but I would rather not give them 10-plus yards if I don't get it than if I do. But at that point, why don't you just punt the ball away? You're not going to go for it. Punt the ball away. Then you give them at least 80 yards. They have to go at least 80 yards to get a touchdown. And then to get a field goal, you know, they haven't been moving their offense so efficiently. It's been kind of hit or miss. So maybe you stop them. Maybe you get another turnover from Flacco. Maybe something happens. But I just don't agree with the play calling right then and there to not only not run it, but to not think of the other options like punting it or to, you know, give yourself a chance with field position to get the ball back on another turnover that you were forcing Flacco to do. So I put everything on Mike Tomlin. The players went out there and did exactly what they're supposed to do, except for Antonio Brown. I don't know, you know, like I said, I don't know what it was, if it has to do 100% with the play calling with Antonio Brown, or if it's 50, the fact that he's got a brand-new quarterback and a left-handed quarterback with Vic not knowing the entire playbook and him not exactly having a good rapport with Vic. That's what I'll equate it to. I think Mike Tomlin should have done a better job at the end of that game, and I put this loss solely on him. So he took it at the end of the game. He said, you know, he's open to all criticisms because it was his loss, and he knows it. So I don't think there's any reason for all of us to keep bashing him in his retrospective. Everyone's going to continue to. And I know some people are going to put it on the backup quarterback who only had 3 days to prepare for this game. But I just don't think you should put it on Vic because the whole thing, like I said, the whole precursor to this game was we need Michael Vick not to lose us the game. And he did nothing in that game to lose you the game at all because he didn't. He did the one thing that everyone was talking about for three games that they said he couldn't do. He didn't turn the ball over. They said there's no way Mike Vick is going to go through this game without turning the ball over. That's what he does. And he didn't do it one time. So he did what he was supposed to do, and the play calling was just not the right play call. And like I said, there's different ways. Like I said, not going for the field goal, I understand that the percentages are really low, and you had a kicker who had just missed two. I understand, don't. But the play calling of not giving it to Bell, or not even trying to punt it doesn't make any sense. So I'm just not with either of those play calls at the end of both fourth downs. They were ill-advised, and they were just the wrong thing to do. And let's not forget the other special teams blunder at the end of the game. Even though they win, we kind of forget that, you know, John Harbaugh goes for a fake field goal that would have tied the game at the end of the game there, and they don't get it. And, you know, if the Steelers were smart enough or you know, I don't want to say smart enough or talented enough, but if they were good enough to go get another seven, that game is out of hand and out of reach at that point. But they gave it right back, and it allowed the Ravens to come back and win. But let's not forget, John Harbaugh is not devoid of any blame, even though he came away with the victory, because this was no good victory for the Baltimore Ravens. This isn't even a moral victory or even any kind of anything else other than you just got a W because the game had it had to have a winner at some point. You know, I know we've had ties, but in this rivalry, there's got to be a winner. So I just don't think we should heap so much on the Tomlin as much as we should also put some over there to Harbaugh and his play calling as well, because he didn't really do a good job either. He kind of just got handed the victory more so than got it.
Okay, looking at these two teams, they're both at the bottom of the AFC North right now. Now, looking at Pittsburgh's situation, I don't know if it gets worse until they wait till Ben comes back. The Ravens get their first win of the season. And to be honest, I mean, Aiken was the guy that was leading the way in the receiving game, but it's been Steve Smith outside of Aiken. Who else is going to step up outside of, I mean, Forsett finally gave them a game where he looks like he has glimpses of number 27, even though, you know, Chandler hit it on the head. They won't look the same without Ray Rice. Forsett actually, you know, helped for a day, just for a day, make them forget about Ray Rice. But they need consistency out of that backfield. I mean, which way do these two teams go? I mean, Pittsburgh and them waiting for them to come to full strength. I mean, looking at Michael Vick in this situation, knowing how much he loves his tight end, as much as him and Algie Crumpler were a tandem down there in Atlanta, or, you know, the tandem that he had while he was in Philadelphia as well. Heath Miller, a household name in football in the league, two targets, one catch for 1 yard. He didn't even hit Heath as much as he possibly should have been hitting this game. He should have been somewhat comfortable, somewhat. I'm not going to say completely. I won't give him 100%. Give me 60%, though. But which way do these two teams go? Chandler, I'll come back to you. You know, the Baltimore Ravens, they're picking up their first win. The first couple of losses that they had, they watched a lot of teams put up a lot of points on them. And Pittsburgh still as well. Their one win, they got up against the Rams. The other one was up against the 49ers. Everything else, it's been a questionable run for the Steelers up until this point. Your thoughts on where these two teams are going moving forward?
He had one day to prepare, Ty. Of course, do you know how limited this game plan was? There were probably 10 plays, period, in the playbook for him. 10 for the entire game. The game plan consisted maybe of 10 plays. Did you notice every single time he had to check his wristband? Did you notice how close they came, especially late in the game, to getting delays of game because of the check with me's and all of that? Of course he didn't throw to Heath Miller. He probably never hasn't thrown to Heath Miller all year. Oh, and by the way, if they get that same performance out of Michael Vick and get 20 points a game, they're supposed to win. They're supposed to win. They were up 20-3, I believe, or 27 regardless. They were up more than two touchdowns. They were up more than two scores. That's not on him. That's on the defense. They got exactly what you ask a backup quarterback to do. He gave them every – listen, if every backup quarterback in the league played like that, do you know how many teams would win with their backups? Do you know how many? If Johnny Manziel had given the Cleveland Browns – matter of fact, Johnny Manziel did give the kind of that, but if he had given them half of that when he came in for McCown that day, Cleveland would have won that game. This is more about the fact that the Ravens stink. The Pittsburgh Steelers are right where they're supposed to be with the backup quarterback. He came in there, he didn't turn the ball over, he got them 20 points. What else was he supposed to do? He's not going to throw for 300 yards. He had one day to prepare. One. Not three. One. The game was Sunday when Ben got hurt. You get that Monday. Maybe they did a little bit of work. Tuesday is when you put the game plan in. Wednesday, you're traveling. The game was at home. So he got, so call it 2 days. He got two whole days. Exactly how good was he supposed to look? And he looked pretty doggone good. Again, zero turnovers. This is about the Baltimore Ravens stinking, stinking, stinking. They stink. If they were playing anyone but the Steelers, they would have gotten blown out. Justin Forsett got like 150 yards. We all know that's not who he is. Come on.
Right.
Outside of Steve Smith, they have no receivers. The kid Perryman is lost for the year. Rashad Perryman, out for the year. They don't know when he's coming back. To me, that says out for the year. When the team says we don't know, that means out for the year.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you understand what I'm saying? So the reality is this is more about the Steelers losing this game, so the Steelers are fine. If Mike Vick gives them this performance the next three games, they will win three of those four games. Well, unless Mike Tomlin decides he don't want to kick, but, you know, absent that, they win three of the next four games, or they win the next three games if Mike Vick gives them that performance. The Ravens, dude, they are in trouble.
And looking at the Ravens situation outside of Aiken, his next receiver was Steve Smith. Steve Smith had a four-catch, 24-yard day. Outside of that, it was, you know, basically two catches here, three catches there. There's a lot of question marks around Joe Flacco and his offense with no weapons around him. None. Nacho, your thoughts on this situation? Which way are these two teams going? Which one fights their way out of the cellar? Which one is going to basically stay at the bottom of the barrel?
Well, in order to properly answer that question, you got to know the schedule. And for the Pittsburgh Steelers, let's just do the next five. Let's see how they go. They got Chargers, Cardinals, Chiefs, Bengals, and Raiders. You get the Bengals, the Raiders, and the Cardinals all at home. Those games are tough games. And I think, to be honest, with this defense and the way it's been looking, I honestly think the Cardinals and the Bengals can beat them in Pittsburgh. This is a defense right now that just totally broke down in the last, 15 minutes of the game or 20 minutes of the game and let Baltimore do kind of what it wanted. There were spurts where Baltimore got in its own way. Like I said, John Harbaugh is not devoid of any, I don't want to say blame because they won, but, ill will because they should have blown that game multiple times in the Baltimore Ravens, but they didn't. And the Steelers having to go to Kansas City, that's a tough place to play. For an offense, I know, for looking at Vic for the next four games, that'll be his fourth game. I know this offense should be a little better by then, but that's a really tough place to ask a backup quarterback, even Mike Vic, to go into with that pass rush and that crowd, to come out unscathed with no, interceptions or fumbles. So that's another tough game. And then you got at San Diego, up or down. I believe they're 1-2. They haven't played yet. So let's just see what San Diego's got in store this weekend. But, again, San Diego can put up 50 this weekend and get shut out next week. That's just what San Diego does. So I'm not really sure at San Diego how that game's going to go. But we know Phillip Rivers is a good enough quarterback to take advantage of that defense. So they're going to be able to put up points. Well, that offense with 10 days now, with 10 days rest and, more time, can they get it together for the San Diego game? That's something that, is really interesting, for me. If they can get it together, they go down to San Diego and they get a victory, who knows, they can end up probably 2-2, maybe 3-3, possibly 4-2, if this offense starts to click correctly, because like I said before, this defense is like Chandler said, this defense is what it is, what it is, but this offense is supposed to have weapons. And if you've got Mike Vick and he's playing at a good level, and like we said, he did everything he was supposed to. If he continues to play that way, if he continues to show that he can make the right reads and do the right things and not cough up the ball, then this offense can probably keep this team in some games. High-scoring games, but it'll keep them in some games. So, you know, not without, you know, warrant or merit, you know, let's see what happens in 10 days. But over the next five games, I've got them probably without Ben Roethlisberger and Michael Vick at the helm. Over the next five games, they're possibly going to go 2-3, you know, making this a 2-4 stint. If it continues to go the way it is now, and that defense just letting it go, and then Mike Tomlin fumbling at the end there. If that continues to happen, while this offense is thoroughly going, I don't see them winning games. But if they can get in line, if Mike Tomlin can get out of his own way at the end of games and know what the right thing to do is, they might be able to pull some off. But as it stands, what we currently see put on the field, what I just witnessed last night, this is over the next five games, possibly a 2-3 team. As for the Baltimore Ravens, they have a quite easier schedule coming up. I believe it's got it's at San Francisco. Then it goes. Sorry, give me a second here. At San Francisco, then they go to Arizona. I'm sorry, give me one second here. And they got Browns coming in next game, which is October 11th. So they got the Browns at home, winnable. They got to go to Santa Clara, winnable. And then they got the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and then the Jacksonville Jaguars. Their schedule is really nice. Their schedule is really, really easy over the next five games. I think Arizona and possibly San Diego, the only ones that, you know, actually look good. Jacksonville, for all intents and purposes, they're right on track where they should be. And then we see the Niners and the Browns. So, you know, I think the Ravens, as much as they do suck, as a team, they can't really do much. Steve Smith needs to be 40% healthy, but who knows now after last night. Justin Forsett is Justin Forsett. You know, they get some hand knees, but who knows if they can actually take it because, you know, last night with the backup quarterback, you were supposed to go in there, even though it's Pittsburgh, against your rival and get this game against the backup quarterback. And you did, but it sure as heck didn't look like it until Mike Tomlin started getting in his own way. So, you know, you can't rely on that opposing coach to fumble it every single game for you to let you get back in it to win it. So I'm not going to be too thoroughly impressed, but, you know, over the next five games for these Ravens, you know, because they're gimmies, because these teams haven't really proven much to the naked eye right now, to me, this is possibly going to be 3-2 over the next five games because they're getting easy games against teams that they can beat, especially when you get the Browns and Jacksonville at home. And then, again, you have to go to Santa Clara. But, you know, who knows what's going to be left of them or what's going on over there. So I'm thoroughly not going to be impressed if they do come away 3-2 because they're not going to look like good victories. They're going to be victories against four teams. And we'll see when they got to go to Arizona, you know, in 3 weeks, what this team is really made of.
Okay, well, hearing from what you say from what Pittsburgh is presented with, I think ever since Michael Vick has left the Jets organization, he's lost confidence. I think they don't win a game until Ben gets back. I'm sorry. They barely got by the Rams. And they picked on a beaten and battered 49ers team. And I don't even want to say battered because they're not really battered. I want to say a patchwork 49ers team. In this game right here, while he has a supporting cast, and I understand that since he's only seen this, you know, the first team reps for one day or what have you, he at least had a game play while he was in Seattle. I mean, not Seattle, in St. Louis. So he did get some reps with them, and they ended up prevailing on top. However, I do agree their defensive issues still lack, and they play teams like Arizona who's going to throw the heck out the ball. You can't even sleep on the Raiders anymore. The Raiders throw the heck out of the ball also. Their hands are full. Pittsburgh's hands are full. The Ravens, I don't know what's going to happen here. I had Forsett last year fantasy, and 1 week he's hot, the next week he's not. So for him having a 150-yard rushing day, I beg to differ that if he could do this in a week or well, in 10 days, because this was the following week. So he has a 10-day span to get back out there and prove me wrong But outside of that, I mean, Aiken had a 70-yard receiving day outside of him. Nobody really did anything receiving the ball for Joe Flacco. And I don't really see the consistency there. I see him forcing the ball a lot. He doesn't have Pitta there to help him out at the tight end position, which he once had a few years ago. And it looks just like I said a little while ago. I think this is more or less patchwork for this Ravens team, especially how they're not able to stop anybody except the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are now in their number two quarterback with Michael Vick at the situation. So I think the Ravens they actually are out of the slump of not getting a win. So at least they have a morale builder to build off of that. But I don't know how much this offense feel confident. And two, like I said, the Steelers, you're going to have to prove to me that you can steal one of these games up against the next four or five opponents that you do have, because every one of them are thirsty to continue to win and definitely to knock you guys off, because historically you guys are known throughout the NFL.
Hey, Ty Chandler, I got a question for both of you. And the way, Ty, you put it, is this a situation in the AFC North, this could be a quick answer, that we see the Bengals possibly clinch this division in week 14, where they're getting two, three weeks of not having to worry about anything but who they got to face in the playoffs? If you're talking about Pittsburgh losing the next five games, and the Ravens, if they don't look anything better than Pittsburgh, so they don't possibly go 1-4, 0-5 maybe, 2, and the Bengals stay on the same track, and they're winning, and the Bengals, say, only drop one or two games over the course of the next 5 weeks, and they say, let's say they win this weekend, so that puts them at 4-0. They drop one game over the next 5 weeks. That's 9-1. You're looking at Pittsburgh and Baltimore, who've got three wins, while Cincinnati would have possibly 8-9 wins. I mean, what would, like, is that what we got? Was that what you really think could happen?
Yeah.
Is that?
I remember I said this was the Bengals division, and you guys know I can't stand Andy Dalton or Moron Lewis.
Right.
I said Moron Lewis. I said his name.
I know.
This division is a walkover for them, man. This division is a walkover for them, especially if Nacho is right and they do lose these games, and even if Michael Vick plays well and they still lose these games because their defense is terrible, this division is a walkover for the Bengals.
He said by week 13, though, you know what? I think so, and that's the beginning of December. That's not even like midway. That is the first week of December. I say yes. It depends on if the Bengals start slipping. Now it's up to these teams that are going to play the Bengals if they can stand up to the call, because I think the Bengals have had enough of being picked on and getting to the postseason and not only getting there but only able to score a touchdown each time that they're able to get there, especially with the offense that they do have and the defense that they notably are able to put out there on the field. And knowing Marvin Lewis is a defensive-minded guy, they should be able to do more. So I think they're tired of it. And they're doing this silently, not with anybody taking notice or wondering what the Bengals are up there doing. They are going out there taking care of business and putting the W in the win column like they need to do. By week 13, I'm scratching my head by going with it. But, yes, I will. Because the Steelers have to get out of their own way. The Ravens have to get out of their own way. And let's be honest, I'm going to actually speak for myself. If they continue to go with McCown, I want to know how long the Browns go with McCown before they get Johnny Football in there. Once they get Johnny Manziel in there and they start to see that he can put together some winning ways for the Cleveland Browns, then maybe I can switch my stance. But right now, while they go with Josh McCown, I'm not buying that one bit. I think Cincinnati's running with the AFC North. They're running with it. Okay. Call number 917-889-9592. Like I said, I was going to get to the Miami Hurricane situation. And it's tough. And like I said, I don't like talking about my team, but I have to, especially while I'm here in the kitchen. But I know probably a lot of people didn't catch it. I know I was watching this from beginning to end, and watching how the Bearcats actually took advantage of and got to an interesting lead up 14-3. Miami fought their way all the way back into this game and took the lead at 20-17, and then it was like the offense completely stopped. They did not score points like they wanted to. They could not slow down Cincinnati. Cincinnati ended up taking care of business, 23-34 at home, up against this Miami Hurricane team. Now, I do like some pieces on this Hurricane team. I like Yerpe. I like Brad Kaya, a close friend and affiliate of somebody that's very dear to him. They have some interesting pieces on the outside, but continually people continue to look at the coaching situation for the Miami Hurricanes. And every single week it's either D'Onofrio this or Coley that, or the name that they love to throw out there the most, even including myself and Al Golden, and what the heck is going on with this team and the schemes that they're calling. This is the week after week situation for this Miami Hurricane team, where they'll be in the red zone at the 5-yard line, and they're set up in the shotgun with a spread offense, and they don't have, like, pro-standard players. They have collegiate players. It's not like they're going to throw a jump ball and win something on the outside. They're waiting to see something happen, get a step on a guy, and have Kaya force that pass, and they're not successful. So I know we've mentioned this week after week. I know Chandler probably would beat me with a bat if he's seen me talking about this situation. I'll start off with you, Nacho. I'll go at you first. Your thoughts on the Hurricanes, with them losing this game up against Cincinnati, next Saturday they go into Tallahassee up against the Florida State Seminoles, where me and Chandler will be going at it once again in one of the more epic rivalries in college football. Where does the Hurricanes go from here?
Sorry, I had myself muted there. Like you said, they go to FSU, then they got Virginia Tech at home, and then Clemson at home, and who knows what Clemson's looking like, especially if they can pull off the victory this weekend, what they got going on over there, and then Virginia Tech, it's hit or miss with them. So I'm not 100% sure. Like you said, I didn't catch the game, and this is a team in Miami who was 3-0, who I thought was quietly making some moves down there, but it's one of those things now that it's really just to see. Like I said, you got FSU, who right now is ranked number 11. Who knows what they'll be ranked next weekend. And then you've got VTech coming into home, and then Clemson. Again, you don't know what Clemson will be ranked then and what they'll look like. So it's just going to be very interesting over the next three games, and not just Florida State. And like you said, that rivalry is huge. And to have it so early in the year is kind of surprising to me. I don't know that rivalry in the historic, when it historically is in the year. But, a rivalry like that, to me, seems to be an end-of-the-year type of thing. But to have it so early, that might be a good thing for Miami. You're not thinking about it all year. It's kind of out of your system now. Where Auburn and Alabama, it's in the back of their mind all year until they get there. And ASU or U of A, it's in the back of their mind until they get there. I think this is a good thing for them that they get this rivalry early and out the way, especially if they can come away with a victory. Like you said, I didn't see the play last night. I can't tell you exactly how they're going to look on the field this coming week. But this is a game, because they're playing a ranked opponent, or, for all intents and purposes, will probably be a ranked opponent next week as well. This is going to be a game that I'm going to keep my eye on to see if they can take down a ranked opponent. And especially if they win, FSU could possibly be ranked in the top 10, if not 10 or 11. This is going to be one of those things, this could change the outlook of the Miami season at the end of the year if Miami is able to run the table and get it all done. I'm not saying they will, but if they are able to run the table, this one loss might not keep them out of some crazy discussions at the end of the year.
Chandler, your thoughts on this Hurricane team, especially how they let this game slip away while they ended up coming back and catching Cincinnati while they were, in stun mode. And Cincinnati basically came back and, took this game right back out of their hands as well.
Well, one, you're probably the only person that watched that game. But no, you know what? Listen, man, and I'm not saying this to be mean, but Al Golden is not a Division I head coach. He's a good coach, and he's a coach that if he were at a mid-major, a Miami of Ohio, an Akron, someplace like that, we would be talking about what a great coach he is. He's not built to be a Division I coach. He's just not built for it. I'm not surprised he lost to Cincinnati. I think that they will, they always get up for the Florida State game. It doesn't matter who's ranked. It doesn't matter how bad either team is. When those two teams play, it's you throw the records out the window. I think that Miami has a shot to win that game, to be quite honest with you, because I'm not impressed with Florida State, you know. But, I mean, you know, to me, we should be talking more about the fact that Alabama's ranked 13. You know, because I remember a few weeks ago when y'all started talking about college football and upsets and BYU and this, that, and the other, and I poo-pooed it, and Ty got upset and changed the subject. Like, you know, in the rankings. The teams that are supposed to be good, Nacho, you remember that day, the teams that are supposed to be good aren't. Those so-called mid-majors have closed the gap. The days that of the SEC being dominant, those days are gone. But Miami, I'm not surprised they lost. I actually expected them to lose. And I think until they can get a coach in there, sort of like a Jimbo Fisher, a Brian Kelly, a guy who's built for Division One, I think we're going to continually see Miami be a team that comes close but doesn't quite get over the hump.
Okay, I know Nacho said that he had something that he wanted to throw out here at the roundtable, so Nacho, please have at it.
You know, I did, and I got one. We'll get over this, and I'm sorry, guys. I got to get out of here. The newborn's having some issues. But the thing is, I was, you know, watching a bunch of things and reading some stuff, and the outcry in baseball, because if I'm not mistaken, there's three 90-win teams that'll pretty much eliminate themselves, and you know, because that's the way of the wild card and division winners. And we hear this in the NFL and as well as the NBA. Division winners with inferior records to wild card teams getting that nod when it really isn't the way it should be, because they didn't do it just because they won their division. The other team won more games and did what they were supposed to do. So you're kind of discrediting a team that goes out of their way to win as many games, and just because their division has a team that is just as good as them and gets, you know, one or two games more, you know, that reflects them as a worse team than someone else who's, you know, in some cases in baseball could be 10, 20 games, and in basketball could be, 10, you know, 5, 10, 15 games. So, you know, in the NFL, it's usually only 3 or 4 games, but that's still a wide margin when you've got an 8-win team going in, you know, with, you know, at home facing a 12-win team like San Francisco had to do a few years ago against Green Bay. Granted, they went into Green Bay and won, but they shouldn't have had to make that travel. They played a hell of a season. So my question in the dish is, which major, you know, association, the NBA, the NFL, and the Major League Baseball, which one changes their playoffs first and makes it a seeding only, and division winners pretty much just get a trophy and a banner, and they get on with their ways? They still make the playoffs, but when it gets into the seeding, those division winners could be a 5 or 6 seed in the NFL, so to speak, using that as an example. They still make it in, but they're not, you know, seeded highly. Which conference or whatever, how you want to, major association, does it first? And if they all three do it, which one will it most affect and be most you know, efficient for?
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on the question that he poses here at the roundtable?
Well, let me say this to the people whining about the National League Central Division. 1976. No, wait. I'm sorry. 1980, when we still just had the American League East and American League West. The Baltimore Orioles won 100 games. New York Yankees won 103. Guess who made the playoffs? You want to make the playoffs, win your division. Stop whining. First of all, there's too many teams making the playoffs in baseball anyway. Wild card, second wild card, fifth wild card. Stop making professional sports participation trophy sports. If you want to make the playoffs, win your division. I'm so sick of hearing this nonsense. Well, but if I was in the East, but you're not in the East. You're in the West or the Central or wherever. You want to make the playoffs? Be better than the Cardinals. I don't care about Cub fans. I don't care about Pirates fans. I don't want to hear your whining. You want to make the playoffs? You don't want to get eliminated in one game? Here's the thought. How about you beat the Cardinals during the season? How about you actually win the division? But to answer your question, Nacho, it's going to be basketball. Because they're already kowtowing to the, well, you know, if such and such was in the Eastern Conference, they've already done their thing where they've done away with the seeding. Where they're going to do now, instead of a division winner, you know, getting a specific seed, they're going to go by records. So basketball has already done it, pretty much. So basketball is going to be the first one to do it because they've already done it. And then it's going to be football, and hopefully never baseball, but at some point baseball, but basketball is the first one to do it.
Okay, I don't know. That's actually a tough one, but if I had to pick, I go baseball. I'm going to stick with baseball. It's already they extended it to five teams in that one game play, and I think they're going to have to let that game stick even more. That's going to have to be a short series or something. I think baseball needs a little excitement or something to pull people in because, you know, football and basketball are actually, you know, more relevant, you know, in the eye of, you know, sport fans. Even though baseball is the American pastime situation, a lot of people go watch baseball games, but it's nothing like, you know, the monsters in football or the big names like LeBron or KD in basketball. So I think baseball needs another kick, if you will. But that's that. I'm going to close up because I know Nacho said his newborn needs a little tension, and we are at the doorstep of the ending here at the roundtable. So, Nacho, I'll let you go first. Anything that you'd like to promote, plug, or shout out as we get out of the roundtable this evening?
You know, again, thanks, guys, for letting me come on. Just real quick on the question, you know, like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see which one does do it fully. Just letting best records in and division winners pretty much are, you know, a trophy and a T-shirt. But the thing is, I think the NFL does it. I think the NFL is so much in the way of we are so innovative. We can reinvent the wheel and give you a floating wheel. I think they can do whatever they want and make it better, and regardless of what happens, you know, regardless of what everyone else thinks, the NFL knows best. So I think the uproar, and I think the only thing that has really set it back over the past few years is the fact that Seattle took on I think it was an 11-win game team when they were, I believe, 7-9, and won that game. You know, we all know Green Bay lost to San Francisco when San Francisco was a 12-win team and Green Bay was an 8-win team and San Francisco had to come home. So that was another, you know, case notch in the case, you know, why should they have to travel and things of that nature. And then most recently, Arizona traveling to Carolina and taking that loss last year, a team in Carolina who, you know, was handed the division because they showed up pretty much in a division that didn't show up at all. So I really do think the NFL is going to make it a whole total, you know, you win enough, the top six teams, as it appears in each conference as winners, make it in. And it's not a way that I like, and I don't think it's anything that I will agree with. My biggest thing that I agree with is that division winners make the playoffs. You still have the two wild cards, but once they're in, you reseed them. And I think that's what the NBA is doing. The division winners still make the playoffs, and they just reseed them once they're in the playoffs so that if those division winners don't have a better record than those wild cards, then the wild cards get to get home court advantage. I think that's what the best outcome for this should be. Divisions, winning a division should mean something to go to the playoffs, but just because you automatically win your division doesn't give you the right to have home field advantage or home court advantage, especially if you're facing a team who had a very superior record to you during the regular season because they did beat the teams they were supposed to beat and do that. So, and they still made the playoffs, even though a team in their division had won a couple more games. So I do think that that's the way to go about it. Divisions still mean a thing. They still mean something. But if they don't get enough wins to a wild card team, then let that wild card team get home court advantage. They've done the work all year long. You know, reward them with something. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, I love it. It doesn't really matter to the Packers. We're going to make it in regardless because we own this division. Other than that, it's back-to-back MVPs. It's, you know, 3-0 going into Santa Clara, about to be 4-0 with two of those teams in our division strangling trying to get that first victory. Here we are in week four. So it's one of those things where I feel the Green Bay Packers are looking pretty good. My team's looking good, even though the defense is supposed to be, you know, horrendous. We did hold Marshawn Lynch to, I believe, 60 yards. And last week we stopped that rush. So it's one of those things that, I'm excited. Most of us as football fans are excited because this is great football in general, not just for the Packers, but for all the teams that are playing good. And then the teams that, you know, are expected to be playing better, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Oakland Raiders, they're doing things they're supposed to be doing. They're going in the right direction. And it's just fun. And I love football and I'm excited. So I can't wait for tomorrow and then Sunday, the brunch, and then Sunday when we get into the game. It's going to be all fun and games, and it's the best thing in the world.
No doubt, Mr. Knight, I need a plug, close out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the roundtable.
I'm
Mr.
sorry,
Knight,
what's your time? Yeah, a lot of fun tonight. Nacho, hope the baby feels better. How many kids you got, man? Every time I see you, you got like 20 kids, man. Get that woman a break, man. Read a book. Get a hobby. a lot of fun. Everybody stay well. I'll stay dry. Ty, you keep whining about the weather, and Nacho, get a fan. Other than that, you guys have fun tonight.
All right. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, interviews with blogging chefs. Be back here tomorrow. Doing a gridiron thing and definitely be back for the brunch. Stay tuned. A lot of interesting stuff in the city, in Sports City. And also we got dives back too, so that's going to be crazy trying to set up the college football and college basketball thing in Sports City. So we got a lot of stuff going on in Sports City. Y'all stay focused on that note. Tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Feel it coming in the air.
Yeah. I'm ready.
It's a dangerous love affair.
Come on.
Can't be scared when nickels down. Got a problem, tell me now. Only thing that's on my mind.
All black, everything. And our girls are black birds. Riding with they Dillinger. I can't more in depth if you boys really real enough.